This is Meg Gringard for the ICC, Internet Chess Club, and Chess FM, and this is the podcast wrap-up of round two of the 2007 World Chess Championship taking place in Mexico City. And really, what can you say, but what a difference a day makes. We went from four short draws in round one to action all over the boards today, and I had a lot of fun hosting there on the ICC, doing our live commentary with Grandmaster Joel Benjamin, and we really had a feast of variations. In fact, we were almost wishing things would slow down a little bit. Things got so hot and heavy, and especially in a couple games where the tactics were so wild that all you could do is just kind of pop some popcorn and enjoy the show. Predicting kind of became a moot point after a while in a few of them. So we'll get right to the action. I'll be liberally stealing from Joel's comments and a few others as well about the variations and such today, but we'll keep it light for the most part. So drawing first blood in this World Championship tournament is the world's number one ranked player, Grandmaster Vishyanand of India, scored a very impressive win today, doing it with the black pieces and against one of the favorites, Grandmaster Levon Aronian of Armenia, who many were tipping as a potential challenger here to the two clear favorites, Anand and Kramnik. So this was a real statement victory for Vishy in this one. Very nice piece of analysis, home preparation, as we call it, and the extremely complicated variation of the semi-Slav opening. And this was the product of his second, we mentioned in yesterday's podcast, Danish Grandmaster Peter Heine Nielsen and Macaulay Peterson, our man there in Mexico City, who's doing our good job reporting and making videos and everything else, scrambling around. He went to the press conference and where after the game, and Anand mentioned that the move 17c5 was a product of Nielsen's creative mind, I guess you could say, and really very effective. And this was as an alternative. It looks like it might just transpose, but it actually saves some time tossing that move in instead of playing queen b6 immediately, which looks almost forced because it gets the queen off of the d file, avoiding any nasty pins. But as Vishy showed, after d takes c5 on move 18, there's actually no real danger. Black can play queen e7, which at first looks like it loses the exchange to the move bishop d6, skewering the queen against the f8 rook. But in fact, after that, the queen can actually just take on h4, and then you're threatening mate with g3, so there's really no threat there. So nice piece of work. And Aronian played his king over to h1, kind of just trying to stay out of checks, but by then it was already looking, I mean, it just shows what a sharp variation this is. It was already looking like black was for choice. He played a6, solidifying his queenside pawn structure, and even though Aronian tried to chip away at it, it became pretty clear pretty quick that the white bishop was just destined to lead a miserable life there, boxed in by the black pawns. So Aronian tried to liven things up with a temporary piece sacrifice, 21 knight d5, and at first he looked like he might have something after pawn takes, but then Anand had the great move, and it's possible he was still in preparation here with bishop e5, and that really rains on white's parade, and just rains on everything. It rains on his parade, it rains on his dog, it rains on his porch. Just miserable, because now he's left with a terrible choice. He either takes and gives black a monster knight on e5, or he has to bury both of his bishops with one move, and that's what Aronian felt he had to do with 23 f4. And the black bishop just retreats to g5, maintaining a great diagonal, but then after takes, and then knight takes on c5, the white bishops are just absolutely horrible. And Aronian afterward, in the press conference, according to Macaulay, just said that, okay, Vishy played great, I played terrible. When I played 25 rook d5, and I just completely missed that he would have queen e6, and of course then his you know, really things are starting to fall apart big time after that for white. He scrambled around, he grabbed a pawn on the h file and tried to hold on, but Vishy very, very efficient in the onslaught there to finish him off. And just grabbed the exchange, and didn't last too much longer than that. Very efficient finish from the world number one, as you might expect. So he drew first blood, but it wasn't long in coming before we had more blood on the board, and it came from, again, a not unexpected source, and that was the world champion, the defending champ here in Mexico, Vladimir Kramnik, against Alexander Morozovic. And much like Aronian, considered kind of a dark horse, very unpredictable, can beat anybody, but is very inconsistent player, usually an exciting player. And but very much a similar pattern to the Aronian Anand game. We saw a nice piece of preparation and leading to massive time trouble for the opponent. And that's, I mean, Aronian, for example, was just down to a few minutes against Vichy, and he was already in a really terrible position. And here in Kramnik Morozovic, we saw much the same situation here. And out of Kramnik's trademark Catalan, which he's honed into, although I guess it's kind of like being strangled or, you know, by someone with a pillow over your face. It's really kind of a slow motion opening, but he's just devastating with it. Nobody seems to know what to do against this Catalan. He just understands it so well, and it's not just finding great sharp preparation. It's just his positional understanding of this opening is so great that anybody makes even a slight inaccuracy and he just pounces on him. I guess perhaps he pounces on them with that pillow I was talking about, but anyways, winning a lot of games with it, and of course not losing any. And here he did have a tricky little piece of preparation, although Morozovic decided not to bite. On move 8, he just castled, Kramnik did, instead of playing what looks like the necessary bishop to d2 to cover the knight. So he just offers a pawn there on c3 by castling, and Morozovic really didn't think very long in deciding that he was going to trust Kramnik on that one and not grab that pawn by any of the captures on c3. So again, that's the sort of credibility you get when you're the world champion. Who kind of says, yeah, you want to take a free pawn in the opening? Go ahead, take it. But the analysis we looked at looked very quite complicated. I think maybe he's going to go home and do some homework. I mean, it wouldn't be too surprising to see somebody actually grabbing that pawn in the future. But, of course, that's the advantage of being the guy with the novelty is, you know, the other guy knows you've prepared it and studied it with a computer, and he's not going to get into it into some crazy line. But this one would get crazy anyway, thanks to both players. Real sharp stuff. And then the surprise came just a few moves later. Morozovic challenged Kramnik's knight sitting on e5 with the f6 pawn push on move 12, and Kramnik just left it there. Said, okay, you want to go ahead and you want a knight? Go ahead and take it. And basically, it didn't look like Morozovic had much choice, at least nothing looked any better, really, than accepting the piece sacrifice. So some pretty exciting chess here from Kramnik. And that didn't seem to be his preparation. He could have just been playing a little okey-doke there and pretending to be, you know, deep in thought or just double-checking his lines or something. But he spent a good 15 minutes on that piece sacrifice. So and he had the time to spend because Moro was using even more, but it didn't look like that would have been preparation to use that much time. So he went ahead and sacked a piece, but it became clearer and clearer that he was getting good compensation, that Black was going to have to give that piece back or suffer some serious consequences on that long diagonal. His rook was hanging over there, and the white pawns were getting pretty scary. So there are some various options here, and the plays just became so concrete and tactical that Grandmaster Benjamin pretty much tossed up his hands and gave up. Again, to his credit, he's honest about it. He said, hey, these positions, you just don't know. Let's just wait and see what they do, and we can go over interesting lines and we can have some fun, but there's no way we're going to be able to apply any real wisdom to this. It's just absolute chaos. Both sides have passed pawns and hanging pieces everywhere, so let's just see what they do. And that's pretty much what we did. And it looked like Moro could have just swapped down at one point. On move 17, Kramnik played c7 when we thought perhaps queen b2 kept the tension better. And here we're, of course, you know, I was looking at, you know, computers because they cut through these tactics with no problems. But on the other hand, it's not a lot of fun to give commentary when you're staring at a computer line because they're so incomprehensible in positions like this. It's more fun just to kind of enjoy the show. So enjoy what we did. And basically, he got a lot of pressure from that when Moro decided not to swap down. He could have just taken, well, not just, but he could have taken a queen on c2, but declined. So he tried to complicate with queen d4, which seems to be a mistake. Queen d6 was another move suggested by the computers. That, again, equality in a position this chaotic just isn't a word that should not be used, but that's what the computer says. So we'll go ahead and say that's the objective truth, but still looks like both sides had a lot of chances to go wrong here. And Kramnik responded with the very precise queen a4, very tricky stuff, offering his rook on a1, but creating just too many complications, and looked like white was coming out ahead in all the lines. But Moro by now was down to 2 minutes with still over 20 moves to play before getting the time control, started getting into trouble really bad on the clock. And you can't play a position like this in such so little time. And that was proven out very quickly. And he missed a nice chance that Kramnik started to rush a little bit himself in Morozovich's time trouble, even though Kramnik had plenty of time. And the move 21, bishop f4, is actually a mistake that gives up a lot of white's advantage. And had Morozovich found 21, queen d5, with the amazing threat of queen f3, followed by bishop d5 with a mating attack, an idea that he found a few moves later and was probably kicking himself because by then it was ineffective and too late. But if he'd found 21, queen d5, it would have been anybody's ball game still, although it would have been almost impossible for Morozovich to even make the time control by that point. He was so low on the clock. But for example, queen d5 on move 21, and then if queen takes the bishop on before, queen f3, and there's basically nothing white can do to avoid queen d5, bishop d5 with the mating attack. He's going to have to give up his queen for that bishop. So that would have turned things around quite a bit. White, probably the best move, according to the computers, is rook ac1 in reaction, and that's just insanely complicated. You can play, black can play bishop c5, queen takes a6, sacking the queen, but promoting the c-pawn. It's just an absolute nightmare of tactics, but that would definitely have tossed things back up for grabs. But instead, Moro retreated with queen f8, and was pretty much overrun basically after that. He tried a quick cheapo with knight e5, bishop takes queen f3, hoping for that mating attack, but then there was nothing there, and Kramnik defused everything with queen d1, Morozovich just didn't have enough time to resign. He went ahead and played another few moves, but eventually had to give up, and on move 27 the game ended. And so that put Kramnik and Anand equal lead. Both the other games were of interest, though. We had Gelfand-Grischuk was the first to finish by quite a margin, but it was an interesting one. It was an interesting one. They played some interesting chess there, so I'll give them credit. Nice move in the Queen's Indian line that Grandmaster Benjamin pointed out that he actually pioneered. Databases back him up on that, so that was kind of some fun to get some insight there on the history of that variation of the Queen's Indian with c5 actually is the line I'm talking about, 7c5 allowing the bishop to be captured. So, but they played some tense chess. Nothing got really out of hand, but it was kind of a fun little trap there, a few little tactics there, a little flurry, if you will, and rook c4, knight, and then the rook is trapped, but he gives up the exchange, and then gets it right back with knight g5, threatening mate on h7 and discovering the attack on the rook c6, and that led to a quick liquidation and draw. So that one went into the books, another split point for both of those players, and that left us with the one really long grind of the day between Peter Svidler, as the Battle of the Peters, and Peter Lako. And two consummate grinders and two big aficionados of the Marshall gambit there, the old Marshall attack out of the Ruy Lopez. And that discussion was not dodged today. And Svidler had an interesting new idea in the Marshall, and as you might expect. And Lako got into he didn't quite get down to minutes, but he got into some time trouble. He was about an hour behind on the clock. At one point, but Lako, Aronian, and Morozovich were all an hour behind in their games. It was kind of a strange thing to see. So Swithler's idea was to play queen e2, queen f1, and then knight d2 without bringing the bishop out to e3 first. And this allowed him to save some time and perhaps gain a little tempo here. And there were some interesting lines that we were looking at, actually, that weren't played. 18, knight e4 is one great line. Knight e4, bishop h3. Bishop d1, bishop takes f1, but you know it's just really a wild mess. Bishop takes f1, bishop takes h5, bishop d3, now f3, and to protect that pinned knight, f5 hitting the pinned knight, bishop takes e8, rook takes e8, and now a brilliant move, bishop f4, and actually white is better. And that's kind of what we were expecting. We looked at this amazing line, and thanks also to the Kibitzers there in the ICC. I think one of them chipped in that line. Good stuff. But Swithler didn't play it. He instead on 18 took on e8 instead of that knight e4 line I just talked about. And that led to, still he had a pretty good position. He played knight e4 because there's a rather amusing thing. He can't take that pawn because if he takes on move 20, if black takes on e4, if bishop takes, pawn takes, rook takes, bishop d1, and the queen has no squares. The black queen is stuck. It has to go to g6, after which bishop c2 is a winning pin, so quite a remarkable variation there, and that allowed white to develop comfortably, not something he can often say in the marshal, although, again, Lako did maintain some chances. Eventually he got that pawn back with f5 and suffered for a little while, but found some precise moves there with his knight. Knight g4 is a nice move, and managed to hold that endgame after a long fight. Really didn't battle it out down to the bitter end, but it was kind of clear that if white was going to make progress, he was going to have to give up some chances at a perpetual, which ended up being the case. And they went ahead and agreed to the draw in the bitter end. So that was a fun fight, and Marshall, the other Marshall players in the tournament are going to have to take notice of that one to make sure they're not caught up. Nice new idea by Peter Swithler. So two draws today, and two wins by the big favorites, Kramnik and Anand. So they're on top after two rounds at plus two. That'd be an achievement to do that in one round. They're at plus one, and that puts Aronian and Morozovic at the bottom at minus one. And then we have our four in the middle, Lako, Swithler, Gelfand, and Grischuk, heading into tomorrow's round three. Tomorrow we'll have Morozovic versus Swithler. Another all-Russia battle. Anand versus Kramnik, of course, is the biggie. The world number one versus the defending world champion. That should be a show. Vichy downplayed the importance of it. He just, oh, it's just another game. It's early, etc. But, okay, that's the one everybody's going to be watching, of course. If that's decisive, it's going to mean a lot for the final. It could mean a lot for the final standings. And we have Grischuk Aronian. Aronian going to try to bounce back, but he's got to have to do it with the black pieces. And Lako Gelfand is the other one. So I hope you come in, join us in the ICC for that. We'll be covering it live. Joel Benjamin is back with me again. And you also want to go to chessclub.com and check out Macaulay Peterson's videos, Joel's game of the day. I'm sure he picked the Anand game as well, because he, as he said, who knew the heck was going on in that Kramnik game? It seemed nice, but who knows? So I'm sure he picked the Anand's great win over Aronian, so you'll want to enjoy that as well in case you missed the live broadcast. So until tomorrow, round three, this is Mick Greengard of ChessNinja.com coming to you for the ICC Chess FM. Hope to see you online tomorrow.